And our guest tonight, John J. Harper, will be back with him to talk a little bit more about the hereafter and some earth changes right here on Coast to Coast AM. John, just to let you know, Mel and Thomas Benedict may have had some successes in the hereafter, but the state of California slapped him with a cease and desist order a while back over one of his companies.
Yeah, I'm not tuned to the politics of the corporate end of his activities. I'm speaking from my personal experience with him in terms of hours on the phone and also several days of personal talks that were from the heart. And
sure.
I know that anyone that's trying to go out there and really go head to head with anyone is going to run up to some type of similar situation, perhaps.
Yeah, they claim he misrepresented some things in his company, maybe for even these light machines. And you got to look at it two ways. One, it could be a tremendous lobby against a new piece of equipment that may do miracles.
Interesting, yeah.
Or he did make some mistakes. I don't know which. I don't know the guy.
I don't either.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of these earth changes and also the Mayan calendar. I'm fascinated with this 2012 date. I had John Major Jenkins on, another person you know, a few months ago, talking about the Mayan calendar. What's your take on just some of these past civilizations and what they may have known?
It seems to me, from both my personal experiences in these altered states of consciousness that I've experienced spontaneously various times of my life in the last, since my communication with my deceased friend, where I really believe I was kind of initiated, if you will, in a shamanic sense, to the afterlife through harmonic resonance, you might say. There's something energetic going on that definitely shifted me at the DNA level as far as I'm concerned. So, how would you like to approach this? Where would you like to see us go here?
Well, I guess as a hypnotherapist, as someone who, dwells in the hereafter, what do you think the Mayans had up their sleeve for this date, 2012?
Well, again, I see an energetic shift, as does John Major Jenkins, where, the Mayans, the Egyptians, the ancients saw that space itself was consciousness and that the stability or apparent stability of the laws of nature were not quite that they actually change. And Rupert Sheldrake comes to mind, Dr. Sheldrake in England, with his ideas of morphogenetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we look at field phenomenon, that is where I would focus my attention if I wanted to investigate this. Let me give us a quick example of that. One evening, I took my wife, Connie, out to dinner, and then we went to the movie here in Spokane. And I went up in this mall theater complex, about four stories high, up the escalator, and I got to the top, and I had this overwhelming feeling this is going to sound awful, but I felt like I wanted to jump from this fourth floor open balcony escalator. And I really was just shaken by this overwhelming feeling. And so
why did you want to jump? Thinking you could fly or what?
I just had this feeling that I was going to just leap, and I grabbed my wife's arm and I hustled us into the theater and we went to the movie, but my mind was on that experience.
Whoa.
I was just stunned, you know.
Maybe you had some bad entity trying to get you to jump.
Well, here's the connection to the field theory. This was on a Friday evening, and the next Tuesday, so about 4 days after this experience, we happened to be out at our favorite restaurant again, and I told Connie, I said, there's a new movie that I haven't seen yet. Let's go. And she says, John, wait a minute. It's Tuesday evening. We just went Friday. We don't need to go do that again. Let's wait till the weekend. I said, no, I feel compelled now. I've got to go see that movie. We walked through the same process, the same building. It's at the Spokane Mall, Riverside Mall.
Yeah.
And we were walking in, and we saw everyone leaning over the second-story balcony looking down at the ground, at the courtyard below. And Connie says, what do you think's going on? And without even thinking, George, I said, someone has jumped.
Somebody's jumped.
And this is the quick of this. That man, exactly my age, had leaped from the same spot that I felt compelled to leap 4 days previously. He had walked into the mall, the story went, came out in the newspaper the next day, the Spokesman Review, and it said this man was in his 50s, and he called on his cell phone back to a family member and said, goodbye, I've decided it's over. And he leapt to his death in that exact spot where I sensed this horrible feeling. Well, so there's a real dramatic idea of archetypal energy fields, you might say. And so if this is true, then, that we're charging the air, the space around us with our vibrations, and those bad vibes are really banging against each of us all the time, we need to pay attention to these feelings and learn not to overreact to them. Now, you see, in the Middle East, let's tie that in, and we can come back to Earth changes.
Yeah, because also I want to, this jumping situation, too. Let me ask you this real quickly. How do we know that you weren't either, one, picking up on this poor guy's vibrations, or two, there was some kind of evil, demonic spirit around there that was trying to just get someone, and this poor guy happened to be where you were. Maybe you were strong enough to fight it off. Maybe he wasn't.
I think that there's plenty of opportunities for going different routes with this interpretation of field physics, and that's certainly one of them. But I think that what happened myself, that over time, over a number of years, that as people got to the top of that escalator, that they themselves, for one, just having a bad hair day, for lack of a better idea, maybe gave just a slight impulse to the idea of taking their own life there. And that field built in intensity again and again, was reinforced until it became a literal idea that was forced upon those who were susceptible, you might say. Obviously, not everyone senses this. But now, again, if we're going to become extremely sensitive to the environment, as I say we are, and we're also going to become telepathic, which I say we are, and show again in my book how this is going to take place through the opening of the third eye, well, if this is a plausible explanation, then we got to realize that in the Middle East, for example, you are charging that air every time you get people all stirred up emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that emotions are part of this subtle energy field that we're studying now in physics. And you tie that into the biology of belief with Dr. Lipton. We're changing our DNA, and we're you might say we're rewiring ourselves in the wrong direction. And I feel and sense more and more that that's what's going on in the Middle East. They've just got a situation that is just now in free fall.
I just got an email, by the way, John, from someone, and I want them to know exactly where I stand on this, because I had said earlier in the program tonight, before you came on, that it was wrong for those newspapers to do that, to run that cartoon. I mean, we would be incensed if they did one on, let's say, Christ.
Absolutely.
Right?
You
Christians
bet.
But, you know, this one emailer says, well, you support terrorism then. I said, no. Two wrongs don't make a right. What these people are doing out there is horribly wrong, but it was also wrong to run the cartoons. And there were two drastic wrongs here. And people are wrong on both ends of this.
Absolutely.
And I wanted this individual to know precisely where I stand on this thing. And you know, when you look at what's happening around this planet, it's almost as if, I want to talk about evil for a moment, because I've always been a believer that good will win. And you know, the fact that you've done so much work on the other side, there's no doubt that there's good and evil over there.
Absolutely.
Right now, it seems to me that evil has got the upper hand. And do you feel that way too?
I sense that what we're really coming to a, you might say, a firmer decision point day by day now is choosing sides, if you will. Are we going to give way to the evil? Are we going to follow the dark side in every aspect of our lives? Or are we going to self-correct? Are we going to self-govern ourselves to the point where we're going to actually get involved in co-creating a better world reality? But see, I see this happening side by side. I mean, it's going to be a real knockdown, you know, type situation here in the Middle East. There's no doubt about that. I just thank God, literally, for our military in this sense. I know those men and women, their hearts are in the right place and they're well-intentioned. And when someone comes up to me and wants to butt heads with me about our situation in the Middle East, I'm telling you, look, it's up to the men and women on the ground that are sitting there putting their lives on the line every single hour of every day. They're in theater over there. When they decide this conflict is not productive, then it'll be over and not before.
Listen to this one that just came in. I have a fast blast system here where I get instant messages from Spokane. It says, George, I live in Spokane. I live a few blocks from that theater. I go there all the time. Every time I go up the escalators, every time I have this weird thought of jumping off, and I'm not suicidal. This is weird. What is going on out there? Isn't that something?
That's overwhelming to me. I mean, you know, here we got this good neighbor here experiencing the same thing that I did. But I've been, you know, I've been in tight situations before, and I know how I react. I've flown small aircraft, that type of thing. And, you know, you and I, we've been in some military situations. Even if it's in peacetime, we're still going through training that, you know, you make the wrong decision and you're not no longer in the physical body here, let's say. But anyway, I think that this field phenomenon needs to really be given a hard look and realize that we're charging the very space that we live in one way or another. You know, Bruce Lipton also, one of the things that he hit hard on in the early years was this idea that we are really, our minds are really in the field, in this zero-point field. We're not really in the body. It's non-local consciousness, according to science, and memory is not located in any one spot in the brain or the body. We're literally immersed in a consciousness, and this field energy is being downloaded through our DNA to create the physical form. Now, that is profound implications if we realize that what we're doing every time we have a negative thought is we're charging the space we're in. And then, you know, you go to a social situation, George, and you walk in, you immediately can tell the tone, can't you?
Yes.
Is it bad vibes, or are these folks having fun? Do you want to join in, or do you want to, you know, get away from them? And, you know, if we just take that as a very simple metaphor and realize that we really have some power here collectively, all these wonderful beings that are listening to us this evening, you know, if we decide collectively we want to do something, one thing we just need to do is just be still more and pump some good energy into the system.
I've got this, another message comes in, and apparently this moron Iranian president has just announced a Holocaust cartoon drawing contest. See, so it doesn't stop. It just festers.
Exactly, and he's fueling the fires, literally, of his own people and the entire communities throughout the Middle East. And we've got, like you say, we've got ourselves in a real mess, and this is going to be very interesting, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to downplay this. I'm concerned, as everyone is, that we really have to think this through now.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. I want to talk with you a little bit, John, about your life as a hypnotherapist. How did you get into that end of it, and what are some of the remarkable things you have stumbled across?
Well, one of the things that hit me after I had my experience, this after-death communication experience from my friend George Begay, I realized I had been in an altered state of consciousness. And so I started looking into altered states, and I you know, started studying the brain and going through the entire psychological paradigm on that and all the classics that have been written. And one of the things I did was I started studying clinical hypnosis, and I actually was taught under a very wise man, the late Charles Tebbets in Seattle, one of the great hypnotherapist who actually went back to the vaudeville days, had his own clinic there in Seattle for a number of years with his wife, Joyce. Well, anyway, I went through this and then a couple other years of academic formal schooling in this field, and I started to realize that I had really stumbled into something quite unexpectedly, that if you're going to change your physical behavior, you're going to have to get back into the state that you were programmed in. And as Dr. Lipin says in his own book and in his own seminars, that we are programmed from about birth to age 6 according to the culture that we're born into, the belief systems of our parents and grandparents and the, you know, the teachers and ministers that we encounter. So we're locked in. We're all this information is downloaded. We're like a sponge to about age 6. We don't really have a strong sense of self. And to get in and change those belief systems, you have to get back into that state so you can rewire, you might say, the genetic programs. Well, if we give that just a little bit of credence, and I give it a lot, I realized that if I was going to do anything with anybody, especially myself, I had to learn more and more about this. And when I did and started working with people, Pandora's box opened up for me, because through people in trance, I was getting, they were telling me about their visions of the future. This was back in about the early 1990s, mid-1990s. Most of these have already come true in terms of earth changes, including tsunamis and earthquakes, etc. And I started realizing that, oh my goodness, there's actually a doorway through trance. And that's why the shamans use it, to get in there and tap the zero-point field and be able to predict the future.
The wireless internet of the universe, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I've always believed that. Can we all easily tap into that?
The number one barrier that I discovered in myself was fear. I intellectually understood this years before I was able to use it. There was a subconscious block. Did I really, really want to know the future? And the answer was no initially. Then over a number of years and putting thousands of pieces of information together, I went, oh my gosh, this is where we are going in the future, because we are going to become an interneted telepathic society. Once I realized that the shamans were in fact doing that, they were telepathic, and they were seeing into the energy fields, that I knew that I had to go forward now and do this. And so I've had some very profound experiences myself, one of which was one time I was in meditation, thinking about the future, and all of a sudden I expanded. My consciousness literally from my body expanded into this kind of a sphere of energy. Like it felt like a, almost like electromagnetic field. And I immediately realized that I was telepathic. I mean, I could literally download anything in the universe that I wanted. As soon as I had a thought, spontaneously I got the answer. I mean, it was impressed on me. It was instant knowing. The mystics call this, you know, knowing.
You were that tuned in.
I was for about an hour, and it scared me deeply at one level, but I was just fascinated by it.
Why did it scare you?
Because I guess I'm the type of person that I need to really have things in control. I need to, you know, that's why we have books, I think. I think that's why you can get information slowly. But now you see we have the internet, and then everything's instantaneous. Well, this is all telling me that this is where we're going. We're really the technology that we've been looking for all the time.
Well, I got to tell you, it's poignant. What we're going to do next half hour is we're going to open up Fast Blast. We're going to take some special questions for you, John. The next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Can you believe how fast this night is going?
My God, it feels like time's accelerating right now, doesn't it, George?
It is. It's going way too fast. Very quickly, who taught the shamans?
I believe that the Earth, like I say, goes through a cycle where you're really very etheric in terms of your physical body, and then you get very solid like we're in now. And I think it's a cycle. And so the shamans are like, they're kind of like, everyone was shamanic at one time, and then just only a few, slowly they dropped off as Earth became more and more dense, more physical, the space changed. That's what happened.
Stay with us, John J. Harper. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you're trying to find the name of all the songs, bumper music we play in the program, at the end of the show, and give Lex a little bit of time, but he puts up a recap for the program, and that's where he puts a listing of all the songs that ran on that program. So you'll have it there, the order it ran, the artist name, in case you want to go out there and get the music. So that's where they are, those of you who can't find it. It's right there under the recap, a little bit right after the show ends, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, John J. Harper, and your phone calls. Dan from Bangor, Maine, wants to know, what are the odds that this mall in Spokane might be built over some kind of sacred burial ground or something? What do you think of that, John?
That's a great idea, and absolutely, that's a possibility in this region.
No doubt, no doubt. Mike from Virginia believes that shamanism happens naturally. Now, that's an interesting take.
Yeah, it's a great one. I think there's a lot of truth in that, too. I think that's exactly why I say we're going there naturally, organically, through DNA transformations, kind of the stuff that Dr. Colm Kelleher is about. You recall Dr.
Sure.
Kelleher, right?
Absolutely.
National Institute for Discovery Science, and he wrote a wonderful paper on DNA transformation. He even talked about that we could convert to a light body if need be.
Getting back to your friend George, have you had any more visitations by him?
I had only that one visitation, and I have reflected over the years, what was that all about? And my sense of that now, after all these years, is that it was mission accomplished as far as he was concerned.
He kind of opened up the door for you, or
exactly.
Vice versa?
He initiated me in the shamanic sense. A good friend. An optics physicist. I mean, the man studied light his whole college days, graduated with honors in optics. Who better than a close friend who understands light physics to come and knock on this cosmic egghead's door one morning and wake him up?
When do you think, John, that science will really catch up with the metaphysical world? It's starting, but they're not there yet.
They're not there yet because the curriculums are not structured in a way either in the medical schools or in the psychology, mainstream clinical psychology, and even at the lower grade levels. I've got 8 grandchildren run in age from age 1 to high school, 15 years old, and I look at their curriculum and I go, oh my goodness, here's a problem here, because they're not getting the good stuff. I saw a homework assignment of one of the granddaughters, Jessica, who was trying to be taught about Egypt, and make a real quick example here, the headdress of the pharaoh, which had the serpent on it, they said that was to protect against strangers, against enemies, and because the snake hissed, it was a symbol that this was the king and he wasn't to be messed with, in essence. No, that's not what it is at all. It's the kundalini energy, the opening of the third eye. That's what that symbol's all about.
This third eye that we all have, if in a figurative sense, of course, where might it be in the brain?
It's in the pineal pituitary gland complex, as Dr. Rick Strassman has so well documented with his research at University of New Mexico School of Medicine. And, of course, Rene Descartes said that the pineal gland was the seat of the soul, and he said that 300 years ago or thereabouts. I've done quite a bit of research in that area, and what I think is happening here, George, is that dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is this hallucinogenic compound that's in ayahuasca ceremonies that the shamans use, you know, down in South America, Central America, what I think is going on is that DMT, which is endogenous, which means it's made by the brain. You know, this brain is just a huge chemical factory, and it can create just about anything it wants to. And so the DMT is what regulates the opening or the closing of the third eye. And what is the DMT in this pineal pituitary gland tuned to? I think it's tuned to the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the magnetic fields that John Major Jenkins has shown has a high potential of reaching a critical mass point around 2012. And I think this is what, to get back to the earlier question about the Mayans, I think they knew this. I think we're looking for an energetic field effect reversal of the magnetic field as we get more in tune, more resonant with the energies coming from the core of the Milky Way galaxy and through our sun, that this is going to open up this third eye through literally flooding our brain with more DMT naturally without using drugs.
Well, I tell you what, we're not too far away from 2012 anymore. I thought a few years ago it seemed so far away. It's not anymore.
Yeah, it's coming to the forefront, too. I mean, I can hardly go to a search engine anymore and put 2012 in and almost be overwhelmed by the websites, you know?
Well, it's going to be a Friday night for us on December 21st, 2012. That's the true period that we're all talking about.
Exactly.
We'll be on the air here with one heck of a 2012 party.
All right. I'll be sitting on the edge of my seat listening to that.
I'm just going to bring in a whole bunch of people, maybe even you, John.
Hey, wonderful.
Just to comment on whether you think anything's going to happen. Won't it be something if we get zapped by an asteroid right about then?
Or how about the classical landing of the UFO on the White House lawn?
I'll
go with that option.
That would be a better option. Do you believe in extraterrestrial life?
Absolutely. The universe is full of life. I don't know how much time we have to share with that, but I've got two daughters. They're in their mid-30s now, but when they were in their late teens, early 20s, they had a tremendous experience in the Olympic National Forest of Western Washington, where I actually grew up. And again, to summarize quickly, Michelle and Kimberly, my two daughters, were with a group of folks their age out camping. And when they got back, this was a 4th of July weekend back in the early 1990s, and they were troubled. They were just livid about this experience they had. And so I got the gist of it, and I kind of just let it go. I said, well, you guys had quite a camping experience. I'm not sure what you did experience there and what maybe you were ingesting or drinking, but that didn't pertain to them. Those kids just don't do that stuff. And my daughter Kimberly was very stressed. She was really almost suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And she came, she said, Dad, you know hypnosis and hypnotherapy. Can you do a session with me? I want to know what's going on. What happened to us? So I did. I did a couple sessions. And here's this 2012 coming up again, George. What I was told through my daughter Kimberly, when she was in a deep state of trance, she said that there would be dramatic Earth changes on or about in the 2010 to 2012 time period, and it would alter things such as Western Washington so dramatically that the climate would be more such as a tropical, semi-tropical environment and not what it is today, which is kind of rainforest and then Olympic National Mountains. Very different climatic conditions, and the other thing was that what my daughters evidently saw was animals that really should have had their habitat in the jungles of, say, South America, Central America, and not Western Washington. So that's the quick of that one, but that told me something, that there's a whole lot of things going on out here in terms of alien type abductions and that kind of stuff, which I did communicate, by the way, with Dr. John Mack, the late John Mack at Harvard, about my work. And he wrote me a wonderful letter. George, this busy, busy psychiatrist and professor of medicine, wrote this little guy in Spokane and just said, John, you know, you're on to something with your research and your book and your writings, and I just want to, you know, congratulate you, etc. But I thought Dr. Mack I thought the world of him, of course.
He was one of the best.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie What the Bleep Do We Know?
I sure did. I think I saw it two or three times, and I was just about levitating in my seat. I said, it's about time.
Pretty appropriate for what you do?
Yes, sir. Very much so.
When you started writing this book, what did you come across that you didn't really know before?
I didn't have a clue that the ancients were so wise. I had not a clue that this universe that we're in is so structured according to sacred geometry that there were wisdom teachings handed down from priests and shamans and and that type of folk that really today is unknown by our society. We think we're at the cutting edge of science. Ha! Huh. What we've done is taken a set of laws of nature and kind of set them in concrete. That's what we call them, laws. Mm-hmm. But what they really do is evolve. Everything is in a cyclic pattern. You know, we sit here on a globe that's pretty much spherical. We look around us, the horizon, and we watch the sun go up and down each day. And we look at our wristwatch and we see the clock hands go around and around. And we, you know, look at the calendars and, you know, here it is, February again, et cetera. And yet we fail to see that time is nonlinear. It is cyclic. It is not a straight line. And therefore, if we can really tune into that revelation, we realize that things have happened before and they will happen again according to a celestial clock that astrology speaks to. But if I might, in terms of maybe transitioning or segue into some earth change kind of stuff.
Sure.
I've put together just a few quick one-sentence quotes, and I'll tell you, I'll give you the quote, and then I'm going to tell you the century they were written in, and then let's see if they apply at all today. One quote is, all elements will become altered. The sea will scream out and raise itself against the whole world. The air will be dirty and be polluted. That was written in the 16th century by a mystic. Here we go again.
Yeah, well, that's cyclical.
Okay, quote, when the great time will come, it will be foreshadowed by striking changes in nature. The alteration between cold and heat will become more intensive. Storms will have more catastrophic effects. Earthquakes will destroy greater regions, and the seas will overflow many lowlands. That's from the 13th century.
Interesting.
One more, and then we'll go on. Troublous shall be the latter ages of the world. The trees shall not bear the usual quantity of fruit. Fisheries shall become unproductive, and the earth shall not yield its usual abundance. Inclement weather and famine shall come, and fishes shall forsake the rivers. The people will be oppressed. Dreadful storms and hurricanes shall afflict them. Then a great event shall happen. That's from the 6th century.
They knew.
They knew. They had the opportunity, the skill, the shamanic insight to see into our time period. And they said that this would all occur as we entered from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. Aquarius is the water bearer sign, and we're seeing the seas and the storms and the hurricanes increase in intensity and severity. And because we are dealing with, you might say, a self-correcting living organism called Mother Earth, and now she's entering into a new alignment with the sun and the Milky Way galaxy, and we're being tossed about a little bit, you might say, on this planet because we're in a healing crisis.
I agree. This planet is alive. I used to say this years ago. Nobody believed me. They thought I was nuts. I think this planet is as alive as we are, as a plant is.
I think that she is the source of every second of our intelligence and consciousness, and all the information in the North and South Poles on this huge electromagnet that we're standing on at the moment is what is downloaded. That information is downloaded, and we call our consciousness.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty interesting take on that. How'd you come to that?
Well, I think Chief Seattle had something to do with it. I know that I love the Native American ideas on these things, and you know, Chief Seattle was a great prophet in his own right, and you know, he talked about death. He said there is no death. There's just a change of worlds.
Speaking of Seattle, how do you feel about some of the talk of prophetic talk that Seattle could get hit with a huge tsunami one day?
Well, oh,
you've heard this.
Since you brought that up, let me share another vision.
All right. By whom?
By me.
All right.
In 1994, I told my wife that let's go to the Midwest. My wife's from Missouri. She was born.
Well, I'm from St. Louis.
And my wife's from the other side, from Independence, Missouri.
Sure.
So I said, Connie, I've got an opportunity here. I had just retired early from the federal government, and I did a year as the vice principal in charge of discipline for my old high school, Central Kitsap High School in Silverdale. And I said, well, these kids are going to run me out of here. I know this is not a good career change for me. I think I'm going to go back to the mental health side of things. And I got an interview in Kirksville, Missouri, at a mental health clinic. So I loaded Connie up, and off we went to that interview. Well, this was in June of 1994, in fact. We're sitting at a Days Inn motel, and again, at 4 a.m. in the morning, I was suddenly awoken by this tremendous vision. It was a panoramic, full-color, high-intensity vision of Mount Rainier erupting. And it just, again, just floored me. I went, oh, not again. You know, what's in the water? You know, what am I doing here? And I saw more than that, and I sensed more than I actually saw. There was going to be a massive earthquake off the coast of Washington, Oregon, in the Cascadia subduction zone. I knew nothing about that at the time. This is only coming from hindsight. Sure. And doing the research. But I had this vision, and it's in my book, and I share many, many others like this that I've had. But the point here is, why did I have that vision? And here's what I believe. I was raised at the base of that mountain, Mount Rainier, in a little sleepy town called Pacific City, Washington. Went to grade school there. And my parents and my two brothers and sister, we would plant our vegetable garden there in that soil, that volcanic ash at the base of that mountain, year after year as a child.
Pretty fertile?
Very. And I thought later, I said, well, my gosh, this DNA stuff that Lipton and company talk about, et cetera, is true. That means that my molecules in my body are literally attuned, magnetically resonant with the soil that the food came in. Sure. That I ate as a child. And Mount Rainier is part of me, and I'm part of it. Again, here's this native idea coming up against, we are the earth. You know, in other words, you know, Chief Seattle was the one who said, you're listening to the voice of the earth. I see you with the eyes of the earth. And I literally believe this now.
Well, you know, the fact that you were able to see this and to be able to, I guess, absorb it shows how far you've come.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm very comfortable with this, and to the point where maybe I hope I don't, but it sounds, you know, almost I'm flippant about it. No, I'm not. I take it very seriously. In fact, I moved my family to Spokane, about 250 miles inland from where I was, because of that vision. When I got back from Missouri from that trip,
yeah,
I said, Connie, we're going. We put the house up for sale.
And that was it, huh?
That was it. We've been here 11 years in Spokane in the South Hill Medical District, and that's the reason. That's the honest truth. That's why I'm sitting here and not on the coastline, which I dearly love.
It's a pretty gutsy move then.
It was. And I sense more and more. I was in Seattle a week ago Friday doing a television spot. Someone had called me and asked me to share my insights with them for about an hour on television, and I did that. I hadn't been in town for years, several years, and I really sensed a week ago that things are really moving quickly over there, very imminent, in my opinion. And again, as I shared too, I said, I don't want anyone to change their zip code because John J. Harper has got maybe an upset stomach and starting to see visions again. But I'm very serious about this. I believe this will happen.
But what we don't know is that is when.
Exactly.
Thank God. It could be 100 years from now.
Of course it could be. Do I think it will be? No. Because of the fact of this 2012 alignment and other things that I share in my book, I put together this package basically. Either reject everything or you accept, you know, most of it, because it does come as a whole. You know, it's what I've done is integrate science and spirit and also share my visions with that new paradigm.
Well, we will open up the phone lines now, Mr. Harper, and allow everybody to chat with you about some of the things we've been talking about tonight. I'm George Norrie. Our guest is John J. Harper. And you can get his book, of course, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. Go to his website, johnjharper.com, or here's a toll-free number. If you're into that and don't have a computer, 866-585-1355.